When you're hiring for your small business, you want to find quality professionals that are right for the role. That's why you have to check out LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn Jobs has the tools to help find the right professionals for your team faster and for free. Have you ever used it before, producer Naya?
I have, but I was one of the quality professionals that you mentioned looking for the perfect role. And guess what? I found one.
Oh, wow, that's amazing. What job was it?
It was this very job, and I got it by using LinkedIn Jobs. So if it wasn't for the platform, I wouldn't be sat here speaking with you, Giles. Now imagine that.
Oh, wow, that is truly amazing. Well, we've got a lot to thank them for. And it proves that LinkedIn isn't just a job board. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place.
And on LinkedIn, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Hire professionals like a professional on LinkedIn.
Post your job for free at linkedin.com/purple. That's linkedin.com/purple to post your job for free. Terms and conditions apply. When you're hiring for your small business, you want to find quality professionals that are right for the role. That's why you have to check out LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn Jobs has the tools to help find the right professionals for your team faster and for free. Have you ever used it before, producer Naya?
I have, but I was one of the quality professionals that you mentioned looking for the perfect role. And guess what? I found one.
Oh, wow, that's amazing. What job was it?
It was this very job, and I got it by using LinkedIn Jobs. So if it wasn't for the platform, I wouldn't be sat here speaking with you, Giles. Now imagine that.
Oh, wow, that is truly amazing. Well, we've got a lot to thank them for. And it proves that LinkedIn isn't just a job board. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place.
And on LinkedIn, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Hire professionals like a professional on LinkedIn.
Post your job for free at linkedin.com/purple. That's linkedin.com/purple to post your job for free. Terms and conditions apply. Hello, I'm Giles Brandreth, and I'm sitting in the sitting room of my friend
Susie Dent.
We're in Oxford, and indeed Susie used to work for the Oxford English Dictionary some years ago. And we are both people who love words. Susie loves them professionally because, of course, she's famous as being the person in Dictionary Corner on Countdown and on 8 out of 10 Cats play Countdown. And I just love words because I love words. And we get together once a week to talk about them. Let's be frank today. I say let's be frank because we were being frank the other day and you were telling me about the origin of Frank and how Frank and frankincense, this must have been before Christmas, all come together. Remind me what you were telling me.
Well, it goes back to the conquering Franks. So the race who I think themselves were named after their weapons. I think it might have been a spear. And they conquered all of Gaul, as it was, gave their name to modern day France. But also because they were considered themselves to be superior, anybody who was kind of blessed by them or was considered to be part of the in crowd were known as Franks. In other words, they were open and free and, happy in society. And so to be frank with somebody is to be open and have no hold barred, really. And frankincense is a superior kind of incense.
Oh, it's
all about superiority.
So if you're called Frank, you are Frank. Do you feel Frank? Do you think if you're called Frank, you are a different person than if you were called Fred?
Well, that's really interesting. Maybe we can come to this a little bit later because there's quite a lot of research done on what we have been talking about actually on the show, nominative determinism. And we've had a lot of fun with our listeners on the names of people who aptly fulfill their personality or their occupation. But also it works with first names. And that's what we're talking about today, isn't it? First
Good.
Names.
First names.
Yes. Giles, you know what you must know what your name means.
Curiously, I don't know what Giles means. I felt it didn't mean anything. I mean, I know it's an old name, spelt with, in my case, a Y, sometimes spelt with an I.
Have you avoided this all your life?
Maybe I have.
There may be a reason.
Think it's because I once looked up my surname, Brandreth,
yes,
in the Oxford English Dictionary, and felt and discovered that a Brandreth, the definition was a substructure of piles. So I didn't dare look up Giles.
Well, mine's not much better. You don't get much better for dent.
No, I agree, you don't. Mm. So what does Giles mean?
Well, it came in after 1066, so yeah. Battle of Hastings, came with the Normans, and the medieval given name Giles, with an I at that point, goes back to the Greek originally for a kid or young goat.
Oh, I quite like that.
Well,
like
you can be a young goat rather than an old goat.
I liked, exactly, a young mountain goat darting over the mountains, a kid.
Kidding about.
Kidding about, that's fine for me, young at heart. Give us some more of these words, these names. And what they
well,
mean.
The first thing I should say is that first names, obviously very personal choice, selected by a parent, very different from what are called patronymic names, surnames. And with surnames, there's a sort of huge history behind them and distinct patterns. With first names, it's much more hit and miss, but in quite a sort of gloriously random way. And I would just say I'm not a first names expert. So I've done a bit of research, but I would not say that I'm the sort of best person to judge on this. But let's just have some fun, shall we? Have some fun with first names. Themes. There are so many themes to first names. We must come to your kids because they've got extraordinary names, I think. But first of all, there's the kind of aspirational thing. So what would you like your child to become? Idea of nominative determinism there. So Clement, we have Clement Attlee, Clement Freud. That means merciful. We have, of course, charity. We have faith.
One of our children is called Charity as her middle name.
Lovely.
Scythrid is her first name.
What does that mean?
Charity is her middle name. My wife, who is the author of the Dictionary of First Names, this is the world authority on this.
Your wife?
Yeah.
Oh, my goodness. Oh, we should have her here.
Yeah, indeed. Indeed. She doesn't know I come here. This is a big secret. Don't let on. So she was interested in history, and she read the Venerable Bede's History of the Church in England, and she came across Scythrid in there, who was a saint, the daughter of King Anna, I think the king of the East Angles, S-A-E-T-H-R-Y-D. One of your predecessors of the OED, Dr. Robert Birchfield, a great editor of that dictionary, told us, because we knew him at the time Scythrid was born, that probably it should be pronounced Sethrid.
Okay.
Like Ingrid, Sethrid.
Yeah, well, Ethelred.
We say Scythrid, her middle name is Charity.
I love this. So the red bit, do you know what that means? Because I know red, R-E-D-E, could mean sort of prepared and ready. So that's...
Well, she's ready. She's ready for anything. She's ready for anything. The world throws at her.
Okay.
And she's very charitable too.
Good. So there's the sort of aspirational side of things. And those are coming back, actually. Lots of kids called Hope and Faith, beautiful names. Then you have the kind of occupations. Now, we know from surnames and loads of occupational names given to people. So Fletcher was an arrow maker, for example. Chandler was a candle maker, etc. And that works with first names as well. So George means earth worker. So probably a farmer. And then you've got Casper, which is Persian for a treasurer. So the keeper of the money.
I think that's come
Harper,
back through.
You've got Mason.
Forgive me for interrupting. Casper the ghost is why Casper is popular. I don't think people are thinking of your money changer.
No, no, I think they're just thinking it's a lovely
it's
name.
It's a sound.
I really like it.
But what were the other two you mentioned?
We had Mason, so quite American, and Harper, as in Harper Lee, obviously.
And these are jobs, are they?
Yeah, so I those are occupations. A harpist, a mason.
Oh, a harper is a person who plays the harp.
Yeah. Or it could be a maker of harps. Then you've got where you were born in the family. So this, particularly if you go back to Roman emperors and things, you'll have Octavius, the eighth child. Thomas means twin, originally.
Gosh. Mm. So if you're twins in the family, one might be called Thomas.
One might be called Thomas, yes. Then there are physical characteristics. Again, if you go back to surnames, remember I talked about somebody called Sweat in the Bed and Black in the Mouth? Well, that applies to first names as well. So Calvin, as in Calvin and Hobbes, brilliant cartoon strip, means bald.
Bald?
Bald. No hair. Cameron means crooked nose. Yeah, to have a crooked nose. And then, of course, it went on to become the name of a Scottish clan. So that explains that. Kiara or Kira, that's Gaelic for black, maybe black skin or black hair. Alba, white, fair skinned. Algernon, who would ever call their child Algernon these days? Well, if
well
you have,
actually, Algernon, nice. Algy is quite nice, you
third
see.
Third son?
That's what he means, the third son.
No, it means having a moustache.
I see. You thought I might call a child. But actually, Algernon, it's again the name I might have, because Algernon's one of the characters in Oscar Wilde's famous play, The Importance of Being Earnest. There is Algernon there. But, Archibald sounds like an old-fashioned name, like Algernon, but Archie is
Archie's lovely.
The Sussexes, Harry and Meghan.
It's really famous. It's really popular.
They have a child called
Archie,
and that's a popular name.
Yeah. So these are all physical characteristics, really. Dexter would have been applied to someone right-handed.
Mm-hmm.
Ginger, as in Ginger Rogers, either short for Virginia, I think, or you've got red hair. Grant, from the French grand, meaning tall, and so on. So these are kind of based on the way people look, although presumably babies weren't born bald, or whether they are. Sorry.
Some babies are born bald. Why are you having the... Were your baby, what did your babies look
what
like?
What was it in my tea? Or with a moustache is what I really wanted to say. Anyway.
Yeah, you know, isn't it funny? We have to say that all babies are born beautiful, but many babies are born looking like Winston Churchill. You know, they're not all born beautiful, but you've got to say they're all beautiful, haven't you?
Well, they are beautiful to the beholder, as in the parent. Surnames you have as well, Winston, Harrison, Ross, that kind of thing. Sometimes those are applied to first names as well. Time of birth as well. I haven't really thought about this one, but I suppose Christmas Day, we've got Noel. We have Natalie from the French as well, being born. And then you've got Carol, of course. You've got April, some people call Tuesday. It's particularly popular in America, I think.
Oh, Tuesday, yes, indeed. There was an actress called Tuesday Weld, wasn't there? And there was a famous actor called Frederick March. In fact, he was Frederick March the Second. And if Tuesday Weld had married Frederick March, she'd have been Tuesday March the Second.
Then you've got place of birth, famously Brooklyn Beckham, I suppose. But you've got Brittany, you've got Lorraine in France, you've got Sierra as well, which is quite a nice one. And topographical names. I hadn't really thought about this either. But Glen and Cliff and Rock, as in Rock Hudson. So somebody presumably who is quite rugged and strong.
How interesting. Mm. I knew somebody genuinely who called their child Neasden, because that's where they were conceived. Neasden Jones. That's quite a nice name.
Like they've got a sinus problem to me.
Neasden.
And so it goes on. And then you've got different languages coming into play as well. So you've got Hebrew, I mentioned with Susanna. You've got loads of Arabic, beautiful Arabic names for both Christian and Muslim choices as well. You've got Salim, meaning peaceful. Abdullah, servant of God. Muhammad, I think, means praiseworthy. You've got Germanic ones, which are quite sort of strong and glorious and kind of often quite warlike as well. You've got Slavic ones, Milena, Vesna, Dobromir, and probably it's a lot of protection and peace and love behind those names.
In the old days, people were named usually, weren't they, after saints, or often were named after saints.
People in the Bible, for sure.
People in the Bible. So that's how many people for generations...
Joshua, Joseph, David.
Exactly.
Yes.
They got their names. Then there was a vogue for people being named after flowers, people of a certain generation. My grandmother's generation, people called things like Gladys.
Yes.
After the gladiola.
Yes. Flowers. Flowers are quite big, actually. Hyacinth.
Rhoda, as in rhododendron.
Oh, Rhoda, really? I never thought about that.
I think so.
Okay.
Hyacinth, as in bouquet.
Iris, lily.
I had an aunt called Auntie Hope.
Yeah.
And Auntie Hope, when she died, her husband, Wilfred, married again. And he married, in fact, Auntie Hope's cousin, and indeed her best friend, who was called Beryl, after a precious stone. Again, there's that period. They were
Beryllium as well.
People named after precious stones. And my father was asked to propose the toast at this second wedding, deuxième noce. And by then, they were grown-up people. I mean, they were, I think, in their 60s. So Hope had died, and Beryl was marrying Wilfred. And Beryl was a mature lady, a lady of riper years. And my father proposed this toast and said, "Let's raise our glasses to the happy couple and to the triumph of experience over hope." Well, I thought it was funny. He thought it was funny. Everyone else at the wedding reception looked into their glasses, rather appalled.
Aww.
This unfortunate joke. Anyway, so you get flowers, you get stones, you get saints.
Jade is another one, isn't it? Originally being named after the kidneys. I think we mentioned that, didn't we? Because it was a medicinal cure if you laid it against your flanks.
And are you telling me that these names affect people? So that if you're called Lily, you expect to be a beautiful girl?
Yes. I mean, sometimes I do think it's a little bit cruel. So being called Aphrodite means you've got quite a lot to live up to, not least because Aphrodite gave us aphrodisiac. So
is Aphrodite a female name or a male name?
Female.
fine. Yes, if you're called Romeo, I imagine that creates a problem too.
I have a friend who's got a luckily absolutely beautiful son called Romeo. But yes, it's true. And all of these coming back in, Shakespearean names also coming back in, which I think is great. But yes, social scientists believe that names produce what they call, and you'll know all about this because you are an expert on them, Oscar Wilde, a Dorian Gray effect. So the idea is that names influence our personality, how we're perceived, and even our physical appearance.
We ought to remind people, The Picture of Dorian Gray is a novel
yeah.
by Oscar Wilde in which the character Dorian Gray is painted. He grows old in the painting, but he himself stays young.
Mm. Yeah, so the painting takes on all the sort of physical excess, isn't it? The
signs and he lives a life of debauchery and the painting grows more grotesque as the years go by
yeah.
and he remains as beautiful as ever.
Yeah.
So there's something called the Dorian Gray effect. And what happens there?
Well, the idea is that our physical traits in turn impact how other people perceive us, which again affects how we feel and see ourselves. And so it goes on. But they think that names kind of operate in the same way. So if you, if you were called Kevin, for example, well, Kevin in America is a hero's name. I mean, it's a really strong name. It's slightly ridiculed over here, isn't it,
Kevin? It's a gerbil over here, isn't it, Kevin?
It's a gerbil. My very first crush when I studied in America was on this gorgeous boy who I never managed to talk to, really. I used to work in a porter's lodge at Princeton University, and he was an Adonis, and he should have been called Adonis, instead of which he was called Kevin. I was so disappointed when I heard that. But to everyone else, Kevin was fine and strong and, you know, reflected his personality perfectly. Sadly, he didn't notice me. Yeah, so the thing is, if you are called Rose, for example, you might then act in a very feminine way, perhaps. Whereas if you're called, I think the study was saying, if you're called Alex, which can be male or female, then you might actually in that way sort of be perfect, you know, comfortable in your own body and be and happy to sort of mix both masculine and feminine. It sounds bollocks, doesn't it? But actually,
I think of being called bollocks. Hello, it's Bollocks Brandreth. You can call him Bolly for short.
Or arse ropes. Back to arse ropes. Arse ropes don't.
I've got a son called Bennett. B-E-N-E-T.
Okay.
And this, of course,
that's blessed, right?
It's blessed. It's as in Benedict. It's the same name as Benedict. And but he has had a lifetime of people calling him Benet. Hello, Benet.
Oh, doesn't want to be Ben for short?
He doesn't really like that. He prefers to be called Bennett. Okay. It, of course, it is a surname with two N's and two T's, but he is Bennett, as in being blessed, B-E-N-E-T. Okay. He's coped with that. Of our three children, the youngest is called Aphra, A-P-H-R-A.
Mm.
And, of course, Aphra, we named her after the first woman to earn her living as a writer
excellent.
In this country. Mrs. Aphra Behn.
Oh, that's lovely. And that links into Bennett and so on. So have you got a game, I think?
Well, I'm quite excited because you mentioned Dorian Gray.
Yeah.
And if you take the word Dorian, you can rearrange the letters and what do you get? Another everyday English word? Ordain.
Oh, I thought you meant another name. Yeah, Ordain.
Oh, it's not bad, is it?
No.
So my game, this is what I want to challenge people to do,
okay.
and they can do this during the break or they can just do this for life, is to take a name and rearrange the letters to form an everyday English word.
Nice.
I'll give you, well, we'll do a couple to show them how it works. Rodney. Rodney, that's a good, strong name. Del Boy and Rodney. What's the word? R-O-D-N-E-Y?
I should be really good at this, but without pen and paper, I'm actually rubbish. It's like a big countdown game.
Yonder.
Nice.
Lawrence in the distance, our producer, is calling out, Yonder, and he's got it right. I'll give you one more. Andrew.
Andrew is Wanda. That's Yonder right. and Wanda. I like
Isn't that good?
Yeah.
Ivan?
Vane.
Very good. So I'll give people a few more, and they can ponder it while we have the break. Brian. Craig. Ernest, Stephen, Alfred, and Gerald.
Life's better with American Family Insurance because our home policies help protect your dreams and come with peace of mind. Save up to 25% by bundling home, auto, and life. American Family Insurance. Get a quote, find an agent at amfam.com.
Products not available in every state. Discounts may not apply to all coverages on an auto or home policy. Discounts do not apply to life insurance policies. Visit AmFam.com to learn how discounts may apply to you. American Family Mutual Insurance Company, S.I. and its operating companies, American Family Life Insurance Company, 6000 American Parkway, Madison, Wisconsin.
Every day in America, 60 million packages are delivered. But we don't always know what's inside.
He bent down to pick the package up. That's when the device detonated.
Danger is everywhere. And no one is safe in Austin, Texas. As law enforcement hunts a serial bomber for 19 days. From Sony Music Entertainment, Campside Media, and Pegalo Pictures, this is Witnessed. 19 Days. Subscribe on Apple Podcasts to binge all episodes or listen weekly wherever you get your podcasts.
Jazz, I figured out what Gerald is.
Oh, doing an anagram of the name Gerald? Unscramble it. What'd you give us?
Larged, as in she larged it.
Oh, she larged it. Well, that's very good. My version had been glared, which is an older
very
word.
Nice.
I gave you Brian, which can become brain. Craig can become cigar. Mm-hmm. Ernest can become enters. Stephen can become events. Alfred can become flared.
Nice.
But it's quite a fun thing to do. You know, I sometimes have difficulty getting to sleep. Mm-hmm. I think this is either, as my wife says, it must be a bad conscience. I say it's fear of death. I'm lying there awake thinking I'm going to be dying. And I think you can't die if you're awake, so I better stay awake. And then I think, no, it's 4 a.m. I've got to get to sleep now. So I'm going to try and come up with names that I can turn into words, first names. And having done a lot of boys' names, I'm now moving on to the girls' names. And Mabel has given me Amble. Bertha, I love. Big Bertha has given me Breath. Carol has given me Coral. Lydia has given me Daily. Edna has given me Dean. Anyway, I've gone right the way through it. The furthest I've got down the alphabet, because I tried to do it alphabetically, I got to Rose giving me Saw. And then I did Esther turned into Threes. That's rather good. And I had a sister called Hester. That also can be made into Threes. And Astrid, Triads.
Oh, that's very good.
Yeah.
That's very good. There is a word, actually, I was just looking it up, which the writer Mark Forsyth discovered. I think he discovered it. Sometimes I think, you know, there are authors who make things up deliberately just to see how often it catches on. Very clever, I have to say. But it's a lovely old English word, Mark says. And it's, I think, utcare, U-H-T-C-E-A-R-E. And it's just what you have, Giles. It's that anxiety experience, usually just before dawn, when you wake up too early and you're so worried about things. Everything becomes ridiculously, excessively inflated in your mind. It's all catastrophic.
What's the word again?
Utcare. U-H-T-C-E-A-R-E. That's Mark's word.
I do suffer from this because I've got nothing to worry about in the world and yet I'm anxious every morning. Anyway.
And also that's Matuta Lipia, which was one of my trio from long ago, Grief of the Dawn.
Yeah. We've been talking about names and the anagrams of names. Some people call their child Simone because they know that you can make an anagram of that and it becomes monies. So if you want your daughter in the monies, call her Simone.
We didn't even mention that, of course, there are those male-female sort of flips in language. So you have Francis, Frances, and Francesca, etc. So you have a lot of kind of gendered first names, a lot of riffs like that.
And sometimes, of course, things are named after names, aren't they? Like hurricanes are named after, tempests are named after girls' names, aren't they? Hurricane
Annie. I see what you mean. Yes, absolutely. Yeah. We ascribe names to meteorological phenomena, don't we? Yeah, storm. There hasn't been a storm since.
And a few years ago, I had something called a TESA, which was a tax-exempt special savings account. Mm-hmm. A TESA. And I was quite pleased because you could make an anagram of that, which was asset. So I had a TESA that was an asset.
That's probably why it was called a TESA.
Yeah, maybe.
Little backronym there.
Have we had letters from people this week?
We always get great letters from people.
We call them letters. They're actually emails usually, aren't they? Or they're tweets. And you can communicate with us at purple@somethingelse.com.
That's yes.
Something without the G.
Yeah. I have one from Alan Guest, throwing the book at someone. He was wondering if this book is the Bible. But no, it's not the Bible. It was a sort of notional legal tome, if you like, that judges have at their disposal. And so they give them every sentence in the book. That's the idea, which is quite a nice one. Have you got one there?
I've got a couple here relating to when we talked about the word dumb and the pronunciation of the B at the end of the word dumb. Dylan Plantega, I hope I pronounced the name correctly. He comes from Canada.
Fantastic.
It's quite exciting. We have listeners all over the world.
I love it.
And he says, "Hi, Susie and Giles, I'm Dylan from Canada. What's the origin of the word dumb, D-U-M-B? I remember as a kid watching Snow White and the Seven Dwarfs, and in one of the tunes they used the line, ho-hum, the tune is dumb, the words don't mean a thing. That was in 1937. Didn't know Snow White was as old as that. Anyway, how far does dumb go as far as the origins of the word? So dumb, how old a word is it?
I'm just looking it up in the OED, Dylan, but I would expect, because it's Germanic, they have dumb a Dummkopf, obviously. It was, people know that in German for a stupid head. Yeah, the year 1000. So we're looking at Old English, really. And it would have been definitely pronounced Dumba. And eventually that bee would have dropped off.
Why did the bee drop off?
Because of ease of pronunciation, really. Because when we inherit a word from another language, we try to stick with that language as much as possible. But in the end, it often does prove impossible. And so we kind of adapt it to the English tongue.
On the same lines, Kevin Bradley has been in touch. Hi, Susie and Giles. When you were talking about the silent B on words like thumb, numb, etc., it made me think, is that a word? And if so, where does it come from? For people like me who were born with extra digits.
Oh, he's a polydactyl.
Oh, a polydactyl.
Polydactyl.
I was born with an extra left thumb, which was removed in childhood. I used to work with someone who was born with an extra right thumb and still had it and had to have work gloves specially made.
Oh, amazing.
Anyway, love the podcast. Best wishes, Kevin Brackley. So he was born a polydactyl. He now isn't a polydactyl, but his friend remained a polydactyl.
That's amazing. And remember that the B and thumb wasn't ever pronounced. It just followed suit. It was a bit of a copycat and also probably was influenced by thimble.
Would you describe Anne Boleyn as a polydactyl? Because, you know, rumour had it that she had three breasts, or at least three nipples.
Really?
She was, she was triple nippled.
Never.
Oh, that was well known.
How did I miss this in my history lesson?
I'm having a coughing fit. It doesn't feature much in the Six Wives.
It's
got
to be in Horrible Histories. I have to check with my friend Greg.
But no, I believe that Anne Boleyn was triple nippled. That's the rumour that went round. Difficult to prove.
How useful.
Well, I suppose so.
For babies, I mean.
But is there a word for being triple nippled?
I have no idea. I'll come back to you on that one.
But would polydactyl apply? No, because a dactyl is a digit.
It's a digit, yes.
So that's fingers and toes.
Yeah. And it's related to the dates in our calendar, because we used to count them on fingers. And it's related to the date that we eat, because the trees have leaves that look like fingers as well. So dactyls are everywhere. And a pterodactyl as well, winged finger.
We've got time for one more letter this week.
That was really interesting.
Jamie Barley. Good day, Susie and Giles. I just want to say how much I love your podcast. It's a staple of my week. That's a generous thing to say. Thank you. My question for you isn't exactly a question about the English language, but rather the French. How come there are so many French words in the English language, even though the English historically hated the French? Specifically in my mind, some pretty words like protégé, café, déjà vu, faux pas, and some phrases such as je ne sais quoi and avant-garde. Hope you have a good day. Salut, Jamie.
Oh, thanks, Jamie, for that excellent question, because I often talk about 1066 and all that, and I don't really go into a lot of detail. But essentially, when Harold was defeated and William the Conqueror came in, he could speak no English. So when he, during his coronation, he spoke entirely in French or Latin, and he had to have a translator. Mm. He brought with him his French court, and the only language they knew was French. And because French was the language of those in power and of the nobility, thousands and thousands of words came into the English language. Some we resisted, some we, I think, probably quite happily took on. But what resulted for a while was what was called Anglo-Norman. So it was a kind of mixture of English and French, all sort of mushed together. It was a really interesting time linguistically. Nowadays, of course, so many of the words that we use are French, and we have no clue that that's their heritage, because they're so happily settled in our language.
Probably like heritage.
Like héritage, probably. Mm. Yeah. Yeah, yeah. So many, obviously, that would go back to Latin ultimately, and most of them do. When we talk about having so many Latin and classical words in our language, most of them came to us via French.
Winston Churchill, a great orator, he used to say that he preferred Anglo-Saxon words. He used to say the best words are the old words, and the best of the best words are the short old words.
Mm-hmm. And was he thinking of swear words then?
No, he was thinking of, like, his great speeches, blood, toil, tears and sweat.
Oh, yeah.
And mostly the language he used was Anglo-Saxon.
Yeah.
Those are the words come more from Germany.
Yes.
And Anglo-French words come, Anglo-Norman words.
Anglo-Norman come from French.
And eventually there's a great amalgamation.
Mm-hmm. Well, we just speak to this day a complete mishmash of various languages. And that's why we love it.
That's also why it's the richest language in the world.
Absolutely.
Because as the great Ralph Waldo Emerson said, the English language is a mighty river into which so many tributaries have flowed.
Mm.
French has been traditionally the diplomatic language.
Yeah.
Does that date back literally 1,000 years then, do you think? to
yeah, no, absolutely, to the courtiers. And certain of the aristocratic pursuits, like falconry, for example, or all of those words came from French. Fencing, hunting, all of those came from French.
And they still use the French lingo
quite often.
La langue française.
La langue française.
And of course, the poor French, they tried to protect their own language for centuries by having this special académie.
They still have it.
Which tries to protect them and keep out words like le week-end, le snack bar, even le feel-good facteur. But they've had to accept it's a world.
It was quite interesting. I did a programme for Radio 4, actually, which is coming out this year, on the battle for English and whether English will eventually be superseded by Chinese, by Spanish, and by Arabic, etc. And I spoke to a lot of students at an English language school, and I said, I asked them that very question, how many of the words that you use in your native language still come from English? And they just reeled them off. Every bit of modern technology has gone, they use the English word for it. So it's still incredibly powerful.
Oh, English is the language of the world. If I may say so, English is the lingua franca
it
of
is
mankind.
The lingua franca. Yeah, it is. Will it stay that way, though? Fascinating question.
It will, as long as we're podcasting. Have you got three new words for us this week?
I have. I've got one with a bit of a story behind it. Ultra crepidarian.
Ultra crepidarian.
Yes.
Ultra means extreme.
Yes.
Crepidarian, I don't know, decrepit, is something to being decrepit?
No, actually. It's a very useful word. Kind of goes with mumpsimus, which was one of my trios a while ago. Mumpsimus is somebody who insists that they're right, despite clear evidence that they're wrong. An ultra-crepidarian is somebody who gives opinions on matters way beyond their knowledge.
Oh, it's the story of my life. Thank you.
And it comes from a classical story. It's very long, so I will just give you the short version. But it was Pliny the historian recorded that a famous Greek painter called Apelles put his pictures where the public could see them and then would sneak around the corner to listen to their comments on his paintings. And a shoemaker apparently once faulted the painter for a sandal because it didn't have enough loops in it. So Apelles duly went and corrected that. And then the shoemaker, who was so proud of himself for having actually single-handedly changed the painting, that he started to criticise the subject's leg on the printer, at which point Apelles had had enough. And he replied, with expletives gone, I imagine, that the shoemaker should not judge beyond his sandals or ultra crepidam, beyond the soul, because he knew nothing of anything apart from shoes. That was the idea. So ultra crepidarian goes back to that lovely story.
I think it's a brilliant word.
In street slang nowadays, your creps are your trainers. I wonder if it goes back to that same, not to the same story, but the same, you know, sole of your shoe. Anyway, I need to look that up.
It's good. This tune into this program if you want to learn how the younger generation are now talking.
Mm-hmm. And if you want to sound like an old fart, you can use the word, you can use the word quidnunc, which means...
Oh, quidnunc. That, funnily enough, that is the sort of word that my father did love. Quidnunc, what does it mean?
It's a nosy person, a sticky beak. It comes from the Latin, what now, what now, what now, what's going on?
But that's what it means, what
yeah,
now?
What now, quidnunc.
A quidnunc, nosy.
You like that one?
I like, what do you call a sneaky beak?
A sticky beak.
A sticky beak. You're sticking your beak into, you're sticking your nose into other people's business.
Yeah.
A sticky beak is a quidnunc.
That's not one of my trio, by the way. I just threw that one in for good measure. And my third one is kiddlywink.
Oh, as opposed to tiddlywink.
Well, it can be a tiddlywink as well. So a kiddlywink and a tiddlywink were once old slang terms for a pub, actually, believe it or not, where you got a bit tiddly. And maybe then had a bit of a shut eye. You winked. Remember, the first meaning of wink was to close your eyes, hence hoodwink. So not quite sure why, but especially in Cornwall, they're known as kiddlywinks in old dialect. So I just like that one. I'm off to the kiddlywink. No one will have a clue what you mean.
Three lovely words. I think you're brilliant, Susie Dent.
No, likewise.
Well, no, I really do. I'm going to leave people with a few more names that they can have fun trying to unravel. Just sort of tease yourself. These are everyday English words that also can be the names, first names of people, okay? I give you hurt, H-U-R-T. I give you ideal, I-D-E-L. I give you, this is a tricky one, riding. I give you road. And I'll give you one boy's one as well, sinned. You've got to turn those, take those words.
Got those ones, I reckon.
Did you get all of those?
Well, I'm not going to give the answers, but I think so.
Aren't you a clever clogs?
No, it's possibly, because I'm switched on. Also, you got the book in front of me.
Yeah, well, you are the clever clogs. That's it for this week. We have a fresh one every Tuesday. Don't forget, please give us a nice review if you can, or recommend us to a friend. If you've got a question you'd like us to answer or just want to get in touch, email us at purple@somethingelse.com. That's something without the G. We like to be different. purple@somethingelse.com.
And Something Rhymes with Purple is a Something Else production. It was produced by Lawrence Bassett. Thank you, Lawrence. With additional production... Stop clicking your bio. With additional production from Jemima Rathbone, Steve Ackerman and Gully.
The bio clicking was the best bit.